This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon. In spite of all the closures and delays, we're going to hear from a person who made it clear across the state of Oregon today. I could say just to be here, but I suspect there were other reasons as well. Doug Robertson, the new executive director of the Association of ONC Counties, of course, former Douglas County Commissioner for a long time. So where did you start out the day this morning?
Actually started out the day in Christmas Valley, and we had come from Boise all the way to Burns last night. So we were in Boise meeting with some congressional folks on the issues we're going to talk about today.
Well, what was it like? I'm just curious. What was it like going through the state today weather-wise?
You know, we didn't hit real snow until we got to Sand Creek, and we went through the reserve and on 97 from Sand Creek up to the junction, and then of course over Diamond Lake was a lot of snow, but kind of petered out about halfway down the hill, and really wasn't bad.
Interesting. All right. Well, first of all, let's back up to the front end, because since you've been out of office as a county commissioner for a number of years, so you've been busy with a lot of other things we're going to talk about. Let's back up and not assume that everybody is maybe as familiar with you as they were in past years. Talk about your background and what led to you being a Douglas County Commissioner for decades.
Well, there, we are backing up a bit. I was on the Roseburg City Council for 5 years and got very interested and involved in politics in the area. And it seemed to me to be a natural progression to go to the county and become involved in some of those issues. So I ran for the position in 1980 and was elected. In fact, in your newspaper, interestingly enough, in the primary, the headline of the paper was Robertson and Vianne win primary, Mount St. Helens blows its top. That gives you an idea of how long I served in the position.
So that was 44 years ago, 43 years ago that you were elected, actually.
Yes, yes.
Wow. And you were in office for
33 years.
And at that point, as I recall, you were the longest seated county commissioner in Oregon.
I think that's right.
So you were in there for a long time. Now, when you were on city council, what was your day job at that point?
I had a couple of businesses that I was running, and I was flexible enough so I could do that work, and take care of the businesses I was involved in, and it gave me a great background. I've always been involved interested in politics, and it was a great kind of an eye opener to a lot of things, and so. From there, as I said, it seemed to me to be a natural progression. If I wanted to continue service in that area, it'd be to go to the county.
So after a long time there, you left office, but you have been busy on a number of things. Talk about what you've been doing on since you left the courthouse.
Well, several things. For 25 years of the 33 years I served, I was the president of the Association of ONC Counties, and so I had obviously background in that area, and when I retired from the county, I did continue to do some work for the Association of ONC Counties, and I also got involved with Communities for Healthy Forests, which is an organization very concerned about pre- and post-fire management, and particularly on federal lands. And so I got involved in that, and actually was the executive director for some time there. So I've been busy.
Well, and interestingly, as timing worked out, we talked to the new executive director, Melissa Cribbins, yesterday on the program via phone from over out the coast. So this is kind of, in a way, a two-part series about the topic, because both organizations really work on the issue from different vantage points, but both cover a lot of the same things.
A lot of there is a lot of carryover with both organizations. And some of what we were talking about with the congressional folks back in Boise yesterday, certainly on fire recovery, post-fire management, how to create more resiliency in these federal forest lands and those sorts of things, which, of course, is what Communities for Healthy Forest is involved in, and what Melissa, I'm sure, expressed to you, is very concerned about, and, as you know, served as a county commissioner in Coos County, so has a good background in those issues, is going to do a great job.
So after a few years of leading Communities for Healthy Forest, what enticed you to move to a different position?
Well, we knew for some time that our long-term executive director, Rocky McVeigh, from Brookings, was going to retire. He'd wanted to retire for some time. And so about a year ago, or a little more than a year ago, he announced that he was going to retire. And so we went through a process of a national recruitment and so on and so forth. And You know, Kyle, and I think many people do, the O&C lands in the state of Oregon are very unique for many different reasons. Certainly the physical nature of these lands being in a checkerboard, very different than national forest, and many other things as well. Anyway, the point being, it was very difficult to find somebody who had a background, some experience and knowledge, history of the O&C lands, which is a very important component, particularly in legal strategies that we're involved in and so on. So long story short, I saw that as an opportunity to continue to work on those issues in the association, and I made it known that I would do that, and the board hired me, and that I started in January, and of course left CHF and called Melissa and asked her if she might have an interest in that, and she did, and so it really worked out very well.
And I understand the Association of O&C Counties, even though it's been around for a long time, it's not had very many directors, and that a lot of people have stuck with it for a long time.
Yeah. I'm the fourth after it was created in 1925, and so we haven't had very many directors. Well, and the first director actually was from Douglas County and created the Association of O&C Counties. That was Guy Corden.
So that's four directors, starting with number four right now, in almost 100 years. I mean, that for any kind of organization, that's pretty rare.
Yes. It is.
I guess it speaks to the fact that the people involved in it are really dedicated, really, in deep on the issues.
Well, that's true. And I think there's a requirement to have a pretty good working knowledge of the history and particularly from a legal standpoint, what these lands were designed to do, to produce, why they are in a checkerboard, why the federal government owns them. The federal government, when these lands were granted to the railroad company in 1866, never intended to have them in federal ownership. And that block of history is fascinating, really. Sure, we don't have time to go into that in any detail, but it is very, very interesting. In fact, for those who might have an interest in the history, the O&C website, and it's O and A and D C lands, railroad grant lands. It's a great website, and it's a very interesting history, particularly as it has affected the culture and the development of Western Oregon, and Douglas County being a big part of that.
Well, and because of that unique aspect, we talked a number of times while you were still a commissioner about the fact that since members of Congress come and go, though many stay for a long time, there's always a process. There's always new congressmen, congresswomen, staff leaders, liaisons, and you've probably found yourself re-explaining all these things scads of time over the past few decades.
Many times, and that's part of the process. And in order to affect change or have a clear understanding of, again, the importance of these lands to these 18 Western Oregon counties, it's important that the the representatives, the senators, the congressmen, even the folks in the state legislature have some background in the history and the importance of these lands.
Take a minute and let's go down that road a little bit about the federal government's original intention, why they didn't expect this to work out as it did. Tell us a little bit about that history as the lands transitioned.
It's a story of westward expansion, and it starts with the intercontinental railroads being developed from east to west. There were two intercontinental railroads. One started in Iowa, went all the way to Sacramento. The other started up in Michigan and went all the way eventually to Seattle. The missing link joining those two railroad lines was in Oregon, and it was between Portland and Ashland. There was no rail when those lines were being built. So the federal government recognized that and granted about 2.5 million acres to the O&C Railroad Company to build that missing link of rail. And that construction started in 1866. The criteria and the actual grant was amended in 1869, which included the Coos Bay Wagon Road lands, which the Coos Bay Wagon Road is the old railroad land joining Coos and Douglas County.
Which at one point was one of the only ways to get from here to the coast.
That's right.
Though it's certainly not used for that by much of anybody now.
That's right. That's right. So, and what was added in 1869 were three criteria that the railroad was required to abide by. One was they could sell these lands, but they couldn't sell them for more than $2.50 an acre. They couldn't sell them in blocks larger than 160 acres. But most importantly, they had to sell them only to actual settlers. It's called the settler clause. And, of course, the railroad, which is interesting in the news currently, it seems, violated all three of the agreements not very far out of the box, which really led to the federal government, after the line was completed in 1876, there was still remaining about a little over 2 million acres of the land that didn't sell. The railroad company could sell the land, as it was designed to actual settlers, to help underwrite the cost of building railroad. And so when they got it completed, the Southern Pacific Railroad Company, which had taken over the O&C Railroad Company, decided that they would just keep the land that didn't sell. Well, that, of course, outraged the state of Oregon and a lot of people who pointed out that, wait a minute, these lands were to be sold to actual settlers. The whole idea was to help facilitate getting people out here into the West. So that resulted in a lawsuit. The state of Oregon sued the railroad company in federal court. They won the lawsuit. The railroad appealed it to the Supreme Court. And in 1915, the Supreme Court and took all things under consideration and said, well, you violated the settler clause, which was really the main purpose of granting these lands. And for that, we're going to take the lands back. They're going to be revested. You'll hear the O&C lands referred to as revested grant lands. So we're going to take over 2 million acres back. But because you did complete the railroad, which was the task, we're going to pay you $2.50 an acre for these lands we're going to take back, which was at the time about $7 million. So, this is extremely important, the federal government had no intention of keeping these lands. They didn't want the lands. They wanted them to be productive for settlement and to create economic activities for these communities that were developing. So their plan was, with the Chamberlain-Ferris Act, which was codified the Supreme Court's decision in 1916, to sell the timber on the land and then sell the land. It seemed like a great idea, except it didn't work. And it didn't work because at that time, nobody was particularly interested in timber. They were interested in grazing and in livestock and ranching. in the Willamette Valley and Rogue Valley and so on. So the lands didn't sell. And they tried it again in 1926 with the Stansfield Act. Same thing. We need to get these lands into private ownership. Didn't work then either, for basically the same reason. And finally, in 1937, the federal government said, "Okay, we're going to settle this. We're not going to try to sell the lands anymore. We're going to keep them, but we understand the promises that were made to the counties and the commitments that were made to the counties in terms of these lands being used for development and so forth. So when timber is cut on these lands, 75% of those receipts from the sale of the timber will go to the 18 ONC counties on a formula that was determined early on. And so that was the beginning, really, of the modern era of the ONC lands.
Wow. And I imagine, did the rail companies challenge this?
Well, the Supreme Court made the decision. The railroad company was out of it after that. Their decision to take the lands back was final. But they did get paid. And there's another story attached to the payment, which the counties, starting in 1937, and with the Stansfield Act, there was also another $7 million that was granted to the counties. It wasn't a grant, actually, to help offset the taxes that they weren't able to get because these lands didn't sell. But that $14 million in the ONC Act had to be paid back by the counties out of the receipts that they were getting, which the counties were very disappointed about, but nonetheless, that was the law, and that was that. And the counties were not in favor of that at all in terms of this, because in 1916 the lands didn't sell because nobody was interested in the timber. 1926, the same thing, nobody was interested in the timber, and now you're telling us, the counties, that we're gonna share the timber receipts with you. And the counties, of course, wanted tax equivalency. They didn't want timber receipts because there weren't any. But the federal government made it very clear, we're not going to open the door for local jurisdictions to tax the federal government. So that was the deal. And then, obviously, 1941, when the war began for the United States, all of a sudden, lumber and timber became very valuable. And the counties were very fortunate they didn't get tax equivalency.
Wow. And I think a lot of people have just learned a lot there about the history. And you've always talked about the uniqueness of the lands. For the Association of ONC Counties, what do you see their role being currently? What kinds of things, as you assume leadership in the past few weeks, what things are you working on?
Well, probably front and center is litigation we're involved in. Unfortunately, the current resource management plan for the management of the ONC lands violates the ONC Act clearly in several areas. So in 1916, the association sued the BLM. It was kind of the last resort. We didn't want to, but we were simply left with no other issues. Because at that point in time, with the current resource management plan, over 80% of the ONC land base was locked up in different kinds of reserves and could not be managed for timber, which was mandated by the ONC Act. The ONC Act is a dominant use act. It's not a multiple use act. It's a dominant use act. And the production of timber under the principle of sustained yield is the dominant use. Anyway, so we won that case in 1919. We filed a case in the D.C. Circuit.
Or was that 2019?
2019, did
right.
I say 19?
Right.
Yeah.
You may have been around
a
long
bit.
Time.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, not quite. Yes, 2019. We won that lawsuit, and the judge found very clearly that the current resource management plan violated the ONC Act and directed the BLM to start work on developing a new plan, which we were hopeful would progress. But unfortunately, on the last day, the Department of Justice filed an appeal. So we are now in the Court of Appeals in the D.C. Circuit waiting for a decision. And so anyway, that's a lot of the activity we've been involved in. Also, which you, I'm sure, heard a lot about yesterday, in terms of recovery after catastrophic events. And we all know the 2020 fires were devastating. And certainly to the ONC lands throughout the state, but particularly here in Douglas County, as a example, we have 27,000 acres of old growth reserve that completely burned. And unfortunately, because of the restrictions within the current resource management plan, the dead and dying trees can't be removed. Reforestation to the degree that is really necessary cannot take place. And that's one of the issues that we're very concerned about and talked at length about with the folks that Commissioner Freeman and I met with yesterday in Boise, who two of which are on the Resource Committee and one on the Interior Appropriations Committee. And these are people who understand timber, as you probably know. Representative Bruce Westerman from Arkansas is chairman of the Resource Committee, the only registered forester in the United States Congress. And we had a very good meeting with him when he was in Oregon last fall. So getting that information in front of the right people, changing some of these rules and restrictions and regulations within the agencies that will allow common sense management of these federal lands, which is not occurring today, is a big part of what we're involved in.
All right, out of time for now. Association of ONC Counties Executive Director Doug Robertson, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Kyle.
1257 Inside Douglas County News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.